Simon Park's Connecting Consciousness Show on Wolf Spirit Radio. Simon actively encourages you to post your questions live to him in the chat room at wolfspiritradio.com/listen or call in on 0141-356-4141. Call in on 0141-356-4141. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests and up-to-date news. Please join Simon and play an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Hello, JP.
Hello, Simon. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And hello to all the listeners as well. Well, here in Britain at the moment, it's very humid, but very overcast. So I've got the window open, so we might hear the occasional seagull, because I'm only a quarter of a mile away from the sea. So if you hear strange noises, that's what it is. Plus that, and the cat keeps continually wanting to jump up on top of me.
Looking for seagulls, probably.
Probably.
So, yeah. Hey, we had the weirdest storm here the other day. When was it? Monday night?
Thursday night,
probably. Yeah, hang on, where are we? Yeah, Thursday. The lightning was going across the sky rather than coming down to the earth. It was quite spectacular.
Yeah. Well, I did see that. It was between here at 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was really, really exciting because we haven't had a thunderstorm here for about 10 years. There'll be children born who've never seen a thunderstorm locally. So,
wow.
Something. Right, sir, I suppose we'd better get on with it, hadn't we?
Yeah, so I opened the large book of questions for Simon. Tell me if you've heard them before. Have you heard this one before? Anyway, so let's start right at the top here. Yeah, because there's some people who have posted like a whole essay as question. But so I'm going to try and summarize some of these things for them.
Okay.
Because some of the points are good, but it's very long-windedly put. So the first one is a very interesting question. I don't understand how more highly evolved civilizations or other dimensional creator beings, whom it seems make up the rules for galactic or galactic civilizations, could reasonably or logically decide that one government on our planet, i.e. the US government, can accurately speak for the entire planet. So... And then they go on for so long, but it's talking about there are many people on the planet who are much more aware than the majority and for whom the present paradigm is hellish and has been for a long time. How can these ETs and EDs put everyone in the same category so indiscriminately, and how could they have continued to allow the enforced entrapment of souls here for so long?
Two questions,
but it's generally about like it's the old free will question, isn't it?
Yeah, the first one. It is actually an interesting question, I think. The reality is that those non-benign alien forces recognize one particular government to speak for the planet because they control that government. So when I've said that, you know, a particular ET race recognizes the United States of America as the spokesperson for the planet, that is because that particular government contains an awful lot of people who support a particular agenda. The more benign groups don't, and that's why you've got more benign groups working with Putin and a couple of other countries. To the second question, the reality is that it's twofold. It's incredibly complex to take down the energy grid that surrounds the planet. And secondly, until more people become aware of this, there is this old debate. I think we may have touched on it last time. But basically, when a sizable portion of the people do not do anything about something, then the argument is, well, they must tacitly accept it. So whilst the public in general are accepting X, Y, and Z from a sort of a universal law, it's very difficult to come in and say, well, don't worry about it, we'll do it all for you. You don't have to do anything. And that's just not the way it is. So it's a combination, I think, of it being incredibly technically difficult, because a lot of these generating devices that create this energy web are not based on the planet. They're also out of phase between one dimension and another. And when you sometimes take down one thing, it has a knock-on effect on something else. So there's the technical side, and there's also the free will side. Are you really sure that the human race wants to take this grid down? Where's the evidence of that? So as more and more people become aware that this is in fact a prison planet and begin to rebel against that, then, you know, the energy begins to shift and the balance begins to change. So there were two separate questions, and they were good questions.
Okay, so... there we go. We got. I'm just reading down large amounts of paragraphs here. So, if you want some, okay. Do you want to ask your question now, Nikki? Okay. So, Nikki, my girlfriend has a question. So, speak up.
Wouldn't it be right to say that it's not actually a prison planet, but we have been imprisoned by certain races?
Did you get that?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, I use the term prison planet because when I do my talks, I don't just speak to the converted. The whole point about me going public was to reach people who either knew nothing about the topic or had a very, very slight knowledge, or indeed were full of, you know, misconceptions and lies given them by the establishment. So I am guilty of using terms such as prison planet and ascension simply because it is the strongest and the hardest hitting way to get through to people when there's an opportunity to get them to go and do their own research. But yes, you're absolutely technically correct. The planet is not a prison planet. It's a grouping of very, very advanced, technologically at least, beings. You have created an entrapment device.
Hang on. Say it now. I've got the mic up. Go. Who are these beings, and or is it a consortium? You know, what's the structure?
Archonic. The Archons at the top of the pyramid, and then the one group of reptilians underneath them, and those two between them maintain that system.
Sirius B's, for example.
So what part does Sirius B have in this mix?
These are not pure reptilians. These are they were a form of hybridized reptilians, but yes, the answer is yes.
The answer is yes.
What was the question?
Sorry, Simon, what was the...
I didn't ask the question, I answered.
Sorry, no, what was the answer?
The question to me was, is it including Sirius B?
Oh, right, yeah.
And I answered it.
In the prison planet, okay, yeah.
The ones that are trying to keep us in prison on the planet, are they the Sirius B?
So, she's got lots of questions, I tell you.
Okay.
But, all right, so is it Sirius? So say again.
Is it Sirius B who is involved in that imprisonment? The ones that are trying to keep Earth a prison planet and make us believe that it is a prison planet.
Yeah.
Sirius B have something to do with that?
Did you get that?
Yeah, the answer is yes.
Yes.
Thank
yeah.
You.
Okay.
That's what I said earlier. Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. as a corollary, because this is there's a meme that's going around. That there are a bunch of E2s who are promoting a form of ascension that moves you into a technological body that is like it's sort of sends you away, but it doesn't actually give you a full. It's like a kind of a bypass alleyway that takes you away from being fully conscious. Have you heard about this meme that's going around?
Yes, it's actually true. True in the sense that that is a genuine offer that's being made. It's purely and simply from the Archons, who have always wished to try to turn humanity into a robotic form, and it's being offered in the very early stages now as a cheap alternative to ascension. You can have a virtual ascension. Obviously, anybody with any spark of humanity in them will say no thank you.
Wow. And is this anything to do with being taken into crystal chambers and things like that in the Hollow Earth? Or is this a whole different thing? This is that's the Sheldon Neidl thing. Is this
the eighth dimensional
ascension, isn't it?
This is different. The crystal generated energies have the ability to partially or totally transform living material and move it into another dimension. Depends where you have the other station. If it's totally artificial, you do need another receiving station on the other dimension. So they're totally different. The Archons are offering a form of electronic ascension. The other we're talking about is more of a portal technology that allows you to travel to another dimension to experience that, but with the ability to return. What the Archons are offering you is no return.
It's a one-way ticket to a robot head, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is that Atlantean technology?
The Atlanteans certainly had it. I mean, the crystal technology, although Lumeria was very adept with the crystals, the Atlanteans were, and I don't mean it badly, because I know there's many people out there who can trace a linkage to Atlantis. They're very jealous, and they guarded their crystal technology incredibly well. In actual fact, it was mainly females who held a secret to the crystal chambers and the crystals themselves. So yes, definitely Atlantis.
Excellent. So let's go back to the document, because this is away from the main list, and it's growing all the time. It's great. We'll never run out of questions, Simon. Really. Okay. So you, Simon, mentioned fragments of Christ consciousness in a recent talk. And the question is, by fragments, were you speaking of early Christians, followers of Jesus, who are continuing to reincarnate in the present day? Because fragments is a word used by the Michael teachings to describe individual souls who are part of a greater group soul. Is this what you mean as well? So he's saying early Christians or part of a group soul. If so, what can you tell us about them and also their history and current status? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. That's not what I was talking about, but actually the questioner is accurate. What I was referring to was the Christ character himself. Now, as the physical body of Christ contained a soul, and elements of that soul were either replicated or hived off. And don't please think that I use the word hive as anything negative. And so those little fragments have attached to certain souls of people, so you could have maybe 20 or 30 people who have the Christ consciousness within their soul. Now, in terms of the followers, that's a very interesting question, because anybody who associates on an energetic level with somebody with a very high resonance begins to take on in their own auric field that individual signature. It doesn't mean that they change or their personality changes, but they begin to take on, like a sponge. If you put a sponge onto a drop of water, it will absorb that on. And so those individuals also may reincarnate in totality, or elements of their soul may, as fragments, may actually be joined to souls which then incarnate. So technically on the planet, you could have the same soul that was in a disciple, for want of a better word, that reincarnates in a male or female body on the planet now, but you could have a physical body containing a would normally be a higher human, what I would refer to as a higher human soul, but would have a fragment of one of these people attached to them. So, yes, it's a really good question. Get some good questions, JP. It's good.
Right. Does that reflect what Steiner says about Christ being reborn in the etheric? Asks Nikki.
Yes, it does. the second coming.
The second coming, having an etheric reality rather than a physical reality, or does it happen in the etheric and then it manifests in the physical?
This is like looking into a mirror, because there isn't, we call it etheric, we call it energetic, an energy template that exists. But in order to interact on a physical planet like Earth, you can't just be in the energetic. You have to be in the physical. So you will actually find that these blueprints are protected and kept incredibly safe, because if you lose the blueprint, you've got nothing to regenerate it from unless you have a little piece of DNA or something. But we're just talking about a complete blueprint of a series of characters, frankly, and then it's possible that they can be physically incarnate on the Earth, but also can be from an energy standpoint. When you're on a 3D planet, the interaction tends to be in a physical 3D way.
Good, good. So, more in...
for the Ark of the Covenant, because these blueprints are contained within the Ark.
Did you hear that?
No, I'm afraid.
Right, you're speaking very softly. She's asking about the Ark of the Covenant.
Yes.
Say that again.
Containing those blueprints that he was just talking about.
Contains the blueprints that you were just talking about.
That's why everybody wants to know.
Which is why everybody's looking for it. Do you know if they've found the Ark of the Covenant, the real one?
No. The Knights Templars play a very, very important role, and unfortunately they get a terrible press because most people don't really understand what their role is. The Knights Templars, a bit like the Boy Scouts really, they prepare for the worst. And of course we could say, well, if you prepare for the worst, you'll bring the worst on you. The Knights Templars spent hundreds of years this physical time looking for and protecting sacred relics, and they do have under their charge a number of very, very exotic technologies which are hidden simply because humanity at the moment isn't ready to receive them. Now, I don't mean the ordinary people, because you know what, the people that listen to your show, JP, they're ready. They're ready for this, and they could have it tomorrow. But the people who are elite, the people in government, they're not ready to receive these, because they would just want to make a weapon out of it. They would just want to corrupt it. So I'm not going to be too open on this topic, because it's quite an important subject that has yet to play out. But the answer is the Knights Templars do have a number of exotic devices which are hidden from prying eyes.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Simon. So I'm now going to close the questions from the floor. I'm just going to close the questions from the floor because... oh, God. All right. Will you be quiet after this? All right. Last question. Go on.
Is it possible that the Knights Templar have taken their charge... Or the idea of having it under their charge a bit too far. That they are taking it a little bit too rigidly.
Right.
So they think that they are in charge rather than being the
protectors
or something.
Okay. That is another very good question. And there was a phase of that. There certainly was a phase of that. And unfortunately, as the world had one war after another, and as human greed, in many cases, with these elites, showed itself, I think a number of these Knights Templars just said, well, we're doing the right thing, because look what it's like here. In recent years, the Templars have split from the higher ranks of the Illuminati, and the Templars are a standalone organization now, which is a good thing. And just like any organization, it has people who think that they are doing exactly the right thing and they don't want to debate it, and then it has people that say, well, maybe we should have a debate about it. And I would much rather that the Knights Templars had these objects than some of these elite governments, because they would pass them straight across to off-world entities who then would have some secrets on humanity which is being hidden from them at the moment. So yes, you're correct, but it's probably a beneficial thing, because they don't trust anybody, and that means these things stay hidden.
Well, that's good, that's good.
Yeah. Charge, yeah. Then
yeah. So, now, okay, thank you, Nikki.
Thank you.
Yes. All right, so, meanwhile, over on the other side of the planet, you have said, again, Simon, you have said that the masters of the East, and especially the Buddhists, have pure spiritual teachings. They have often said that it is a waste of time to try and develop psychic powers, that they only get in the way of true spirituality, that they will come naturally as one progresses spiritually, but not to put too much store into them. Do you think the kind of progress they were espousing can be gained by living simply, healthfully, and close to nature, as the renunciate Buddhists and Taoists have always recommended? Or are we obliged today to participate in worldly events rather than renouncing worldly life in order that we may all assist in creating a better world? Or do we need to do both? And is that largely and simply up to the individual and our own predilections?
You paraphrased me there and didn't quite say that, but in the gist of it is accurate. We either engage in the physical world or we don't. Now, I've said this to several people, you know, the days are gone really when you can climb up a mountain or go into a cave and live quietly and peacefully and see away your days, because there's always a tax collector knocking on the door saying, just a minute, you haven't paid a tax. So we don't have the ability and the freedom that we had even 40, 50 years ago. The questioner is asking, I believe, what do we do? Do we sit it out and let it all roll past us, or do we actually actively become involved? You have to understand that people like the monks aren't particularly earth human anyway, and have been given sacred or secret teachings which allow them to develop mentally and spiritually in a way that generally we struggle to at the moment, because we don't have access to those teachings. And I suppose, just like the Knights Templars, the Buddhists protect their teachings. But my point, I suppose, is that we do need to become involved, as long as we don't become corrupted by the energies of what we're involving in. You know, many people, myself included, went into politics because we saw it as a way to change things. But many, many people begin to change themselves without realizing, and before it's too late, or before the time, you know, it's almost too late, they'll look back and they'll realize that they have been corrupted by the system. They did not change the system changed them. So I think that we do have to engage, because it is wrong to sit it out and say, I'll let someone else do it. You know, if we're committed and we believe, then we want to bring some change, then we should be active and do so. But as long as we're aware that the system will always seek to change and corrupt you, if you think about the hippie movement, the flower power, that was a very pure energetic movement, and look how the system began to infiltrate and corrupt and change that. So if we're aware of that and we can guard against it, then I think we should roll our sleeves up and get stuck in.
Sorry, I just got a message from Pop, who's passing on the questions. He said, you may want to clarify, you were joking with my significant other. I got my girlfriend, she's literally sitting on a cushion on the floor. So those are the questions from the floor. Obviously, I don't mean stop all the questions from the chat room. We welcome your questions, and some of them are so on point. It's lovely. Okay, so next question. So, from Himalayas to South America. Can you tell us anything about the soul of Don Juan, the Yaqui Indian who taught author Carlos Castaneda, whose books have had a huge and ongoing influence on several generations, Americans especially, and especially during the 70s, 80s, and 90s? It seemed to me that Don Juan's impact was similar to that of an avatar.
I'm not convinced that it was an alien soul in his body. It was very possibly an enlightened soul. You see, sometimes, very occasionally, when a person is born on the planet, they have full recollection. And sometimes they have partial recollection of their DNA. Now, there are a number of people who claim to be reading the Akashic records, and some of them do indeed, in my opinion, do so, but some, I think, are actually reading their DNA. And for people who are a bit surprised by that, the DNA is a memory. The DNA is a massive memory bank, and for some people they're very fortunate to be able to access it on an energy basis and to bring back what appear to be memories coming from the Akashic records, but they're not. The difficulty with DNA memory is that you are accessing from what you have seen. So through, I don't know, 15, 20,000 years of existence on this planet, you are seeing it from that perspective. Therefore, you'll be slightly stilted, because you're seeing it from your perspective. Whereas if you see it from the Akashic records, providing the Akashic records are not damaged or corrupted, you're seeing it from a much more independent standpoint. There are a number of people like Don Juan who may not have been alien, but may have had access to spiritual teachings and knowledge within themselves. So rather than engaging through some form of a tether or portal to bring down information from another dimension, some people are capable of following an incredibly spiritual life because it's all self-contained within them. Although, yes, there are people that have this connection to another place, where they can continually update their learning. So for me, the jury's out with them. Certainly wasn't an ordinary person. I hope that helps.
Great, thank you. Right, so from South America and the Himalayas, back to Mary Magdalene. You said that the Illuminati are very interested in Mary Magdalene. Can you tell us why, if she is presently on Earth, and anything about the origin of her soul?
They are interested, and they have been for a very long time. Anybody who has any connection with senior Freemasons, anybody who's really, really studied the topic to a great depth, will be drawn to this subject again and again and again. A number of individuals on the planet at a set time contain what scientists would call biometric data. I would just prefer to call it soul data, which is the purest to that creation of humanity. And the thinking goes that if you can get that individual, you can, and if you can unlock or crack the code of the DNA code, and not to be confused with the genome, but if you can crack that code, then you will have access to what makes a human human, and it will be the purest line. You won't be getting something that's, I don't know, thousands of generations down. You have the direct link to source, and this is actually a technology. Reptilians, or certain groups of reptilians, trade genes. That's what they do. They trade genetics. They don't trade gold or silver. It is genetics. That's their thing. So they are incredibly interested, and have been for over 250,000 years, and they haven't got it yet. And frankly, they mustn't be allowed to get it. So yes, there is an incredible interest. Is this person on the planet? Yes. That's my answer.
That's always good to know, isn't it? So, let me just...
Every beaker.
I'm sorry?
I thought for a minute there we'd been cut off, Jay. I thought for a moment there we'd been cut off.
Yes.
That's exactly where I was expecting them to pull a plug on us.
things started getting a bit wobbly there, actually. Sometimes it's like Wi-Fi, so I've just turned off my Wi-Fi, which increases my bandwidth a little bit. Sorry to the neighbours for that. But anyway, you've said, now there's another question, you've said that there will be a moment when everyone on Earth will know the truth. Will that be caused by a cosmic event, by disclosure, by the final failure of CERN, or something else?
Wow.
Good question, eh?
Yeah, I wonder why CERN has been brought into it. Right. What is going to happen is something huge is going to happen, which will make any reasonable person on the planet question just about everything. And what you'll have is a huge understanding that they've been lied to. Now that in itself is monumental. I mean, there's many, many people, JP, who listen to our show, and they say, well, you know, I woke up one morning and I realized the truth, it's no big deal. But you see, those people are already well on the way, even though they didn't know it, they were already well on the way. For most people, it is going to be a massive shock, and they will probably be out of commission for a good few days. Not least because they'll say, well, how the heck did I not see the truth? So the first element of change on a physical basis will be the complete breakdown of trust between what authority says and what the people on the planet believe. To answer the question directly, it will be the second element when the people in power then have to own up, or as much as they can, and that is the point that people will then understand the truth. Putting 20,000 spaceships around the Earth actually wouldn't do any good. It has to come from within. It has to be the people themselves. CERN is an interesting question. That's yet to play out. So I hope that helps.
Oh, another element of mystery there, Simon.
I'll be able to talk more about CERN at the end of the year.
Will there be an end of the year? I mean, the way CERN's going, some people say, you know, that CERN has actually destroyed the universe several times and that we've just been shifted to the next available timeline.
No, that is not the truth. I can categorically tell you, if I wouldn't be sitting here debating this if that was a possibility, because that has to be dealt with if that was going to happen. That's not what CERN's about. Anyone who's listened to my comments on CERN will have my opinion of what CERN is, and I hope that they will take on board what I've said, because I was the first person to make it clear that CERN had not activated over that crucial period, 2012, and explained why. To my knowledge, nobody else was aware that CERN had failed to operate, so I'll be able to tell you more about CERN at the end of the year.
Okay, well, we're also concerned. Anyway, no, Mika, shut up. Anyway, question. Meanwhile, back in outer space, you also said at one point, some time ago, that you were also subject to the Draco technology that recycles souls back on Earth with the memory erased.
Yeah.
Do you think now that you will instead return to Source? If so, when did that change for you, and what caused it?
No, I'm a physical body like anybody else. And the soul in my body got trapped, mind wiped to a large extent, not totally, and reincarnated in this particular organism that I am at the moment. I can't go until the job's done, and I don't know when the job will be done. That's been made incredibly clear to me. Now, where will I go? Oh, we have a free will choice. Depends. If the energy net is still operational, then probably end up somewhere else. But if the energy net is not operational, or I can get through one of the holes that is currently being made in this net, then I'm not sure where my home is. Besides which, if I was attached to somebody on the planet quite closely, I wouldn't want to go, because if I had a physical attachment, then I would want to see my time there with them. But if at the end of the everybody's body's died, well, then I will go somewhere. But I honestly don't know where I'm going to go. I don't know where home is at the moment.
Oh, I got a sense of, oh, from everybody here, so bless. But, it is a very poignant question. For all the crossbreeds, hybrids, outsiders, where is home? And what does it mean by home? Is that the idea of the new earth? Is this home for all the lost souls, or if you like to call it lost souls, but, people who have been disenfranchised from their own people, for instance, somebody who's had a relationship with a member of the enemy class, for instance. I was talking with my girlfriend this afternoon about my parents. My dad and my mum were not allowed to be together, so they eloped. and they went to Gretna Green, which is a place in Scotland, and got married and then left for Canada. So there's this sense of being like, where is home? Do you feel that this is part of the Earth's destiny? Is this what Gaia wants?
Right, okay. In actual fact, when your... Did you say your mother and father eloped, JP?
Yeah, I didn't know about it. They didn't tell me. My grandma told me years later.
That's what grandmothers are there for, isn't it? I find that the most interesting part, because what they did was they overcame the system's suggested controls. And when somebody of, say, a reptilian background forms a friendship or a relationship with somebody, say, their arch enemy, technically, which would be a Palladian, and makes a go of it, what that does is it actually shows the planet, it shows the multiverse, it shows those individual beings themselves in the fourth and fifth dimension, that it is possible for these individuals to live side by side successfully. And I think that is one of the tests of this planet, because if we are just going to live on our past experiences, then we will never heal wounds. And we've got to actually get on and forgive and live together and use the strengths. If you are a person with a Palladian soul, then you have certain values through your race memory. And if you are a reptilian, you have the same. So you would appear on the front of it to be diametrically opposed. But if the person with a reptilian soul makes a conscious choice in this lifetime to be different, then it's not where you've come from that matters, it's what your stated choice is. So if people can actually join together and make friends and work together, then they are making a wonderful statement, and they're setting an example that hopefully will bring change right across the multiverse. Now, the question was complex. Do you think I've answered it, or is there an element I've missed, JP?
I think that's a good... Excuse me. I think that's a good appraisal of that, because there's a deeper question coming along,
okay,
which is... There's some great questions here, I tell you. If I can find them. So it's a massive, it's like 19 pages now, this document that I'm building up. Okay. Right, so this is kind of connecting it. This is, first of all, how long do you think, this is another question, how long approximately do you think it will take for those of us who are awakening to reclaim all our DNA strands so that we will not be affected by this memory shifting device, this memory wiping device?
The problem is...
How long, yes. What will it take? That's the better question, I think. What will it take?
The problem is that even with 12 strands of DNA, this energy device will, if it's operating, will still substantially reduce the person's memory. But if you have 12 strands of DNA, I'm getting very technical here, but I think we need this because it is a question that if I don't answer this spot on, it will lead people the wrong way. If you have 12 strands of DNA and you pass through what some people refer to as the freeze box, that's their technical term for the mind wipe.
Nice.
You have 12 strands of DNA that can't be removed, but it can be fogged or made to forget. But when you reincarnate on the planet, because you have 12 strands, you can open a direct channel to source and reboot. It's very much like getting a memory stick, whacking it into your computer, and the program on the memory stick just restarting the computer. Although I'm not in any shape or form saying that a human is like a computer, I merely just show that as a way to explain it. The other part of the question is about drawing down and the time. This is not a cop-out, but when I say to you that everyone is individual, that means that everyone will draw down their strands at different speeds and different rates. And, you know, we're not very careful. We get a competition going here. How many strands of DNA have you got? Oh, I've got 8. Oh, I've got 9. And we're not careful. We're going to do what the old human game does, which is try and be better than the other person. The reality is that as long as we've all got what we need, when the shutters come down, that's all that matters. Timescale. I want to see people well on the way to reclaiming the DNA before 2017.
Okay, so 2 years, well, a year and a half. That's not long.
Well,
it's a really, really very accelerated sense, though. Or rather, that there's a sense of acceleration through this period. Like, 18 months now will be like 10 years of work in the 80s.
That's a really good way of putting it. Because if you were to look on the energies, it's all ramping up. It really is. But the thing is, it can do that because those of us who are awake or awakening, our bodies and our energies are also trying to keep pace, and so we can take the push. It's like putting your foot, as the Americans would say, on the gas pedal, and just keep pressing it down. And, you know, we're just waiting for the physical body to catch up with the energy, but we're capable of it now because we went through the 21st of December 2012 event, and that allows our bodies now to you know, try and be a bit quicker. It's like when people hold minerals like moldavite and other such minerals, many people go through a sort of a heightened phase for sometimes just minutes, sometimes hours. But what's happening there is that they're being drawn up and sped up. Others have moldavite and doesn't have any effect because they already reached that phase. So everyone's different. Everyone will connect at their own speed. The important thing is that by the time we need it, we've got as many people there as we can get.
I see. So that might be why I just think, this is a very pretty green glassy stone in my hand. But I have had some before, so I might have already kind of gotten that kick into
it. Right. Moldavite doesn't affect everybody, because it depends on your soul. If you think about how Moldavite was created, and I know you know, and I should think most of your listeners know, but it is a mixture of terrestrial and earth material. And as a result of that, it's containing and bringing together two frequencies and two intentions. So it is the intention of the human with the intention of something that's possibly not particularly earth human. And it's that concept. Now, if a person is already at that stage, or their particular soul is so different from that, that it doesn't have that effect, because that's not the way to activate them, or not the way to speed them up, they'll do something else, then for many people hold it, it just doesn't mean anything. But for others, it does. Now, when I held it, I did have a change in consciousness for about 20 minutes. And now when I hold it, it doesn't have any effect, because it did what it was meant to do. It took me to the next stage.
Ah, right. Good. Take you to the next stage when you're ready, eh?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. When the teacher is ready, no, when the student is ready, the master appears. I always get these things round the wrong way when I try to be profound, so I try not to be profound and try to be humorous in order. yay for Moldavite. Oh, I just have to say a really big thank you for Marjorie, who's passing the questions on from the chat room. This is otherwise known as Pop Alexander. She breeds these gorgeous guinea pigs. Anyway, so she's passing the thing, and a couple of years ago she sent me this gorgeous box. She went to the Arizona Crystal Show and got this kind of box of sparkling crystals that arrived in the post one day. So once again, thank you, Marjorie.
I thought you were going to tell me that it's full of guinea pigs.
Guinea pig clippings. No, it was really beautiful. She went to a crystal show and bought me all these lovely things, and so
very, very kind.
Wow. Very, very kind. So and that is, you know, sometimes the listeners surprise—they surprise me, because sometimes things arrive in the post, and it's just, oh, it's delightful. I love receiving stuff, you know.
They've done it now.
I'll be there. Anyway. So meanwhile, anyway, let's go. So, oh wow, so many. I mean, I've got masses of questions that before I just kind of scanned them and tried to find questions that were less than three paragraphs. okay, maybe, here we go.
Maybe what we need to do is to say to people that try to keep their questions shorter, you know, they're more likely to get asked then.
That's right. Okay. So, the question is, do you use the services of the jinn when you are doing private sessions with people who come to you for deprogramming and healing, and is that risky? Whatever that means. So,
No, I don't. I don't use them. I command them to leave people's bodies. Somebody once said to me, when you take a jinn out of a person, do you like to take them back to your house? That was a jinn. And I couldn't be cross, because this person was asking a genuine question, and, you know, that they just, I think they had this vision of a house absolutely like, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street or something, you know, with all the gin floating around it. And I said, no, that's not actually what happens. What happens is that I'll cast one of these creatures out, and it will return to what is called the realm. That is where they go back to the realm before they then leave the realm and then afflict some other poor person. Is it risky? Yes, it's incredibly risky. I have, since January, probably encountered nearly 20 people now who, as children, played with a Ouija board, opened a portal from the realm, and then were infested, and I'm using that word, infested with a demonic entity which has been in them 20, 30, 40 years. And so it is incredibly dangerous, incredibly difficult, and nobody should attempt to try and deal with these creatures unless you really are able to do so. I'll give you a very interesting story. A Catholic priest, very few in the church now will try to banish demons, just won't do it. A Catholic priest was called and was asked to, you know, do a cleansing, get rid of something, and it was only partially successful, and the damn thing followed him back to his priest's house, and he then had to get another priest to come and get the damn thing out of his house, and then he never did that again. So it isn't that you're a holy man, you can do it. It's actually not really to do with that. There are many things that you need to be able to do and understand, and by some strange turn of events, I am in that position, and there are more than just a few, but very few people will actually do it because it brings attention. If you are continually removing these creatures from high-end individuals, and I don't mean prime ministers and all that sort of nonsense, but individuals whose soul in their organic body is very important, and say an elite organization has put that demonic entity into that individual for the express purpose of controlling that person, and then I come along and then say, we'll have that out of you, that is an offence to that elite organisation, because they then lose control of that individual. And when my car was rammed off the road back in 2012, it was because I took a demon out of somebody associated with the Rothschilds. And although this was never officially sanctioned, there were three members of a secret sect, secret organization, who, acting without instructions, decided that they would try and kill me and take me out of our operation. And of course it didn't work. It's never going to work. And I'm sure those three members were severely punished for what they did. So it's not just the danger of trying to take these creatures out, because they can turn on you and go into your body and afflict you, but it's who put them in there in the first place, and what is the deal going on behind the curtain. So one has to really understand that. So it's a long answer, but it's a very complex question.
Well, yeah, and it's something that not many people speak about, Simon. So you're going to be the go-to guy for the gin questions. You're the engineer of our world.
Engineer? Oh, JP.
Oh, no, really. Hey,
did you not realise you made the joke there?
I know. It's an old thing.
Is it? Oh, I've never heard that joke before.
No, it's Indian, because apparently when the Indians first saw the steam engine, they used to go engine, that there's a gin in there.
Of course, because the steam coming out the top.
Yeah.
The smoke.
Yeah.
Smokeless fire. Indeed. Yeah. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. To me, a true engineer is somebody who can communicate with the gin.
Right. Okay. Let me tell you an interesting story.
Tell me.
Yes. There's very little written about this subject, because there's very few people on the planet who know about it. That's just the truth. And those that do are generally in secret societies, and therefore have sworn pain of death not to talk about it. And those who have had a jinn in them and had it removed really just want to forget about the whole subject. Don't want to talk about it. So there's an absolute dearth, a real vacuum of knowledge and information. There was a woman who wrote a book called The Smokeless Gin. No, she didn't. What was the book called? Something Gin. Anyway, there was a woman author who wrote a book, and it was one of the very few gin books available. Someone lent it to me and I had a read of it, and I think it would be quite useful for someone who didn't know anything about the gin. But obviously, from my perspective, I thought, well, yes, I can tell you a little bit more than that. And one of the reasons is because it's still used by secret societies to control people. If you have a very, very high-end individual and you wish to control them, and you have a number of weapons or tools at your disposal, and one of them is to deal with a demonic entity, that demonic entity enters that individual and therefore controls that person's decision-making to a certain extent, their mood swings, and it's one way of controlling a person. So it's a very, very ongoing method used by a wide range of organizations, because it can't be seen generally. And, you know, if a certain person was to commit suicide with one of these creatures in them, well, the creature doesn't die. The creature just returns back to where it comes from. So it's a death that can occur without the authorities even beginning to understand what's gone on. So it's really poorly understood in the Western world, incredibly well understood in the Eastern world. And I've said it before, you $200, 300 quid or whatever will be in your pocket, you can go to a bazaar, market in Turkey, Saudi Arabia, some parts of India, and you can pay a magician to attack your enemy with a demon. And I spend quite a lot of time helping people who have had that. I mean, I'm not, you know, I have loyalty to the people I talk to, so I don't mention names. But there was one particular case where the family had got very jealous of somebody and went and paid you know, to have one of these, their own family member attacked by these creatures. But in the Western world, we just don't understand this.
Interesting, interesting. Being you know, sort of a child of an immigrant, I also mix with other semi-immigrant people, and they used to speak of the jinns of their, you know, I had some Asian friends, and they used to speak of jinns in their family and all that stuff. So
yes,
very interesting. And one of them killed herself.
Yeah. Well, yes. There are more than one sort of demon, and there are those that love the mountains. There are those that love the sea. There are those that love the deserts. And, you know, if you were to have one of these jinns, and it was a mountain or a desert jinn or something like that, and then you took a flight on holiday and you went to that sort of location, then the thing would be out exalting because it would be in its own environment. So one has to understand and have a deep knowledge of these creatures. But you can never afford to... A lot of these magicians, human magicians or semi-human magicians that consort with the jinn, end up being taken over by them, because they lose that barrier that you have between yourself and these creatures. Because ultimately these creatures have their own agenda, and it's not a particularly nice one. So I would recommend that people read up on King Solomon and how King Solomon commanded the jinn to build his temple, his palace. Good starting point.
Well, there's a very, very, very interesting point. Because you look at these ancient, not ancient, but, you know, pretty old cathedrals and things like that, and you think...
They are, that's exactly what they are.
How the hell did they get those stone blocks up there and carve them so perfectly? Did they carve them in place? Did they make a blueprint? Did they have blueprints? They didn't have CAD drawings or design plans. They did it all somehow intuitively, yet it's as almost as if they turned the rock into cheese and then they cut it with a knife and then it turned back to rock. What's the deal, Simon? What happened?
Well, I was going to say that if anybody in the Western world goes and has a good look at a cathedral, you'll see what they call gargoyles. And most of these are representations of jinn. Certainly the ones with snub, dog-like faces and wings. And some of the postures that these creatures are carved in, many people who I've dealt with who have drawn what they've seen actually pose in the same sort of position. So the church is fully aware. Of course they are, because, you know, there was a period in time where they were the go-to guy to get rid of a possession. So they knew all about them. But on one hand, they were casting them out. And on the other hand, some of these individuals were actively working with them. The wider question, literally, there's a whole range of technologies that can be used to create and alter matter. Again, we have a problem here because we technically are told that physical matter is shattered or broken and it can't be formed. Whereas I know for a fact that an alien spacecraft is built atom by atom. So you don't smelt or forge or or mould when you build an alien spacecraft, you actually create it atom by atom. So if you have the technology, then you can shape and form anything, and then you can reconstitute it back into its third or fourth dimension, whichever dimension you're in. I mean, I have quite a fun story where I could say that, you know, the great stones of Stonehenge were probably just gently levitated across the ground, you know, and then I get the old guard of the Antiquarian Society screaming and shouting at me that no, thousands of men dragged these stones on ropes across rollers, you know, and then they just sort of say, well, yeah, go on then, you show me how it was done. And I remember as a schoolboy, so we're back in the 60s now, looking at books which purported to show how the Great Pyramid was built. And then sort of in the 70s they showed that wasn't possible, then they came up with another idea, and then in the 80s that was not possible, and they came up, and so it goes on and on and on. And I did one afternoon, I spent a whole afternoon calculating how long it would take to lay one block in the pyramid, and then I sent my figures off for analysis. And indeed, it was, my figures were broadly confirmed. The the main blocks, I think, in the pyramid are about 2.5 tons in weight, and there's just over 2 million of these blocks. And anyway, I calculated that they would have to put a block in place every 2.5 minutes, 24 hours a day, 365 days of the year, for something like 20 years. It is just not possible. You couldn't do it now. So, you know, the ordinary person in the street who's not awake just accepts it. Even those that go on holiday and they just marvel at it and they go and buy an ice cream. But the reality is that it is not technically possible to lay a 2.5 or 2 ton block every 2 minutes. With no matter how many men you've got. And the other problem that they never tell you about is that Egypt only survived because the Nile flooded, and then when it receded they would plant into the flood area, which would grow the crops because it was the only part there that would grow. So you needed your workforce 3 to 4 months of the year to be tending the crops, otherwise you'd all die. So where are all these workers coming from? You couldn't build a pyramid 365 days a year. You could only build it for about 4, 5, 6 months of the year, because the rest of the time the workforce have got to be out planting the food and tending it, otherwise you're going to have a mass starvation. So people in authority are very, very what's the word here? They don't give you the truth, basically. They give you the truth that they want to give you. And I'm afraid that it's wearing very thin now. And the reality is that as much as I love the Egyptian people, I think they're really great people. There isn't any race on earth that could have built the pyramids without a lot of help from somebody else.
Help from somebody else. Now, okay, I don't know if there's any other pyramid related questions. I mean, the pyramids was one of my personal favorite subjects. You know, I've built pyramids over the years.
JP, how about this one then, that Russian oligarch, which you'll know, Russian oligarch built 6 pyramids in Russia some 15, possibly 20 years ago. Small scale models, and some of them are in the Ukraine. And some experiments were undertaken by the Russian government, because the Russian government, unlike the Western government, is far more open than we're led to believe. And they did some interesting experiments, and they put some convicts, some prisoners, into this 1/3 scale or whatever it was, 1/12 scale pyramid. And they brought them in there, I don't know, it was a 20-minute period, then they went out, then they came back the next day, 20-minute period. Then they checked the offending rates of these prisoners once they were released, and it was startling. The vast majority of the people, prisoners, who'd been in the pyramid over a period of time did not reoffend. So there was absolute evidence that it had a beneficial effect. Now, immediately anybody good would say, that's fantastic, let's knock all the prisons down and let's build pyramids. And if you're a good person, that's what you do. Unfortunately, the justice system is worth billions, makes billions, and it's part of the divisive system. If you're not a good person, we're going to lock you up. It's not quite the same as if you're not a good person, we'll put you in a pyramid. And so the system perpetuates the criminal justice system when there are non-chemical ways of actually changing people's energetic behaviour. So that's actually documented, and you know, people can go online and have a look at that. Sorry to interrupt you, JP, but as you said you like pyramids, I'll tell you about that.
There you go. Now, I have heard of that. Not only that, he puts blocks of stone, I think it was some form of granite, into these pyramids, and then he placed these blocks of stone. Oh God, who's ringing me this time? He placed these blocks of stone. He placed these blocks of stone.
That's a question for
you. Maybe they are bringing back in a minute. But he placed these blocks of stone in prisons as well, as a sort of side experiment. And it turns out that, again, the same effect, by being around things that have been in a pyramid, somehow the energy rubs off. And so the thought that I had as you were speaking was, why not make get prisoners to make pyramids?
Right, I think it's about the intention. It's a bit like prisoners sewing mailbags. Will that mailbag hold mail longer than a bag made by somebody who isn't in a depressed state? So I think if you get people who are in a depressed state to build something, the energy they put into it is not the right energy. So we'd have to get people who had the right energy, and then you would then introduce these individuals to it as a mark to reconnect them to source. So yeah, I think the concept's right, JP. I would just change it by doing that.
Right. I found, you know, that if you task yourself, I'm going to build a pyramid, and you have to do all the research, you know, like, how do I do all these angles and all these things, that it's like an entire university education. You have to do loads of research. It's unbelievable, the different, you know, you've got research materials, you've got to research angles, you know, the geometry, the mathematics, the Z point compressions of space and time that are produced by you know, and the sacred geometry. Yeah, there's a whole load. It's more than just a shape. So I found it a wonderful experience. What do you think about people in general, or having more pyramids, or are there other forms than pyramids? Is pyramids like that's the Taurus age? Is, you know, what would be the Aquarian age form kind of thing?
No, it has to be pyramid, because that's the angle that works with the ionization. I'd be terribly unpopular, and I would say let's just mothball all the churches, and then we'll build pyramids, and then people can go into the pyramid, have some quiet meditation. You don't need to swing any incense, or dress up in very long robes, or wear very pointy funny hats. You could just go quietly in your jeans and your little shoes, and just sit there quietly and just have half an hour contemplation and come out again. And they should be free, they should be placed everywhere, and people should have the right to go in at any time they want. But you know, I'm not quite the same as the elite, am I?
Although, you know, I'd be 100% with you. Listen, it's over an hour. Let's just play a little track, because I need to take a little bathroom break, as our friends say. This is a request from one of your group, from Nikki down in, I think it's Devon, or down in South England. And it's a lovely track. So this is the Return to Innocence by Enigma.
Okay.
So welcome back to Connecting Consciousness on Wolf Spirit Radio, a subscriber-supported station, and donations. We take donations and subscriptions. Check out, we've got massive, massive, massive amounts of archives and interesting stuff. So welcome back to Connecting Consciousness. And Simon, we have been talking about demons and jinns and things. I'd like to go back to the human side. So here is a question. So we've now caught up, by the way, with the questions that have come from before the program. So now these questions have started since the program starts. They're a continuous flow, and they'll probably just continue to flow, and maybe that's the way it just goes. Anyway, the question: are special abilities like telekinesis, telepathy, and so on related to specific strands of DNA? Or is it more like you need at least, say, 20% of three strands of DNA activated? That's an interesting, you know, is it the amount, you know, it's like a kind of, you know, amount thing, or is it like specific strands have specific powers and gifts?
Very good question. Before we do that, that was a nice song that Nikki had chosen, and it was very interesting because I don't know the song at all, but it was almost as if it was North American indigenous Indians. Some parts of that seemed to mean that to me. And of course, the indigenous Indians had a very strong connection, or do have still a strong connection with the planet Earth. So that was a nice one you chose, Nikki, thank you. Right, back to the question. The DNA strands, as they activate, are activating particular soul family lines. So if you are activating your reptilian DNA, if that's one of your soul lines, and it's coming through strongly, then your aspects will develop towards that. And so the next one comes in. It's not literally about 20% I can do this, or 30% I can do that, or, oh, goody, I've got my Palladian DNA, so I can go and swim with the dolphins. What it actually means is that when all of those strands have come in, then you will be able to have your telepathy, your telekinesis, and that's why the elite are absolutely hell-bent on preventing that, because you couldn't be put in prison. You know, you're put in prison, then you'll teleport yourself out of prison. So it's you just can't be controlled. And the last thing the elite want is a human population that they can't control. So what we do notice is people on the 10th and 11th strand of DNA suddenly become very, very, very psychic. Uri Geller was not a trickster. Uri Geller really could bend metal. That's why Mossad, the Israeli secret intelligence, got him and forced him to work for them. And he was probably on his 11th strand at the time. So when people can do strange things, which, you know, humans are not supposed to be able to, it is because they're well on the way to bringing in their strands of DNA. It's one thing to bring the strand of DNA in, it's another thing to be able to organize it in such a way within your body and your mind that you are using it accurately. So basically, I mean, you know, why the heck can't we in a few years' time have centers that are set up where we can actually teach people how to get connected, how to speed it up, how to do that? And obviously, you know, there isn't an elite organization in the world that would ever give me the planning permission to open such a center. You know, it would be raided by the police every 5 minutes. So we can't do anything like that at the moment. But I seriously do believe in the few years ahead that we'll be far more open to pushing the boundaries, and it won't just be about acupuncture or Reiki. We can actually really, you know, start talking about some of the life-changing things that we have to do. So I'm just waiting for the vast majority of the human race to catch up with, you know, the 25% of the population who are aware. And once we start to do that, then there should be no boundaries for us. We should just go out and do it.
You know, you've been talking some, you know, sometimes you talk about, I wish I had a community where you could do this sort of thing. And this is a very similar thing that I have. And that it would be involving small groups, small clusters of community that had like a spare house. Like you'd have five families, mm-hmm. and there would be a spare house where one family or people or something or a couple could stay and go through the process. Each of the different people were healers. So healing, you know, you would have a couple, one healed, one strand, and the, you know, that each of them concentrated on a specific strand or aspect of healing that would, you know, basically top everybody up.
Absolutely. I mean, it's found similarities in some of the Chinese and Japanese cultures, but not for healing. Somebody would be very spiritual and want to be a samurai or a kung fu master, and they would go to one of these teaching places and they would say to whoever's running it, I want, will you take me on? And most of them weren't, but occasionally some of them were taken on, and they would go and spend time in one location, then they would go somewhere else to learn another aspect of it. So learning has always been seen as a journey, and you achieve and obtain what you are meant to achieve and obtain in one respect, then when you've reached that point, you then have to go somewhere else, and a different person with a different skill basis will take you on there. So what you're saying, JP, is accurate, because it is the only way where an individual will get the support and help. Because, let's face it, we've all of us been programmed by television, radio, newspapers, education system, and you have to cleanse yourself of that before you can then rewrite the blank pages. So I think that, you know, that the model that you've put forward, you know, let's just hope that it becomes a reality very soon.
Excellent. Excellent. I mean, it's like, because as you were talking about this, the zodiac, the 12 labors of Hercules, the 12 strands of DNA, the 12 tribes of Israel, the 10 plus 2 aspect of it.
Yes.
This is all the metaphor, isn't it?
Of course it is. That's why you look at a clock, the numbers run from 1 to 12. That's why from January to December are 12 months in the year. It's why in Great Britain we have an imperial system still, running alongside our metric system, and we had 12 inches in a foot. So, you know, and the Americans still run on that system, and it's there for everyone to see, but because most people don't actually understand why 12 was such an important number.
And so we're talking about these 12 strands, the 12 astrological signs.
Yes.
The 12 notes of the chromatic scale. Mm-hmm. The 12 colors. So we're now mapping frequency. We can map character, because each of the qualities of the astrological signs has a character associated with it. Can we also associate those with star race origin beings?
Yes, that's the whole point. That over a very long period of time, a wide range of different creatures have associated themselves with what we would call humanity, to the extent that they are part of the family. And this is when people talk about we're all connected, or we're all part of a big star family, and often they leave it hanging there, so the listener is often left wondering, well, what does that mean? What it means is that over a very long period of time, the human race in the wider sense contains elements of these major 12 groupings who have genetically engaged with humanity over that period of time. And, you know, I know it's not politically correct to talk about shape-shifting, because there's so much nonsense on the internet. You know, it's almost a crime to even consider the possibility of shape-shifting. And if you shape-shift, you shape-shift into a reptilian, you must be bad. It's nonsense. Because if you have connections with the 12 strands of DNA, you have the potential to shape-shift into any one of those 12 strands, or the projection energetically of those 12 strands represent, because you are harking back and connecting to a member of your distant family. You know, when people talk about they have spirit guides, or they have guardians, who do they think these people are? You know, in many cases, these are people from the 12 strands who are connected to that individual and wish to come and look after that person. You know, and it's a mistake to think it's separate. There are these orbs, energy orbs, usually the size of ping pong ball or a tennis ball or a grapefruit, look like a big white puff ball, and some people quite rightly think they see faces in them or shapes. Those are their family, who have projected their consciousness to connect with them. And it's because they have a link through the 12 strands. So it's very misunderstood. Very few people talk about it in the way that I do, and that's not because I'm clever or special, it's just that I understand it. Because it's been explained to me. It's been explained to me by things that are not very human. So their understanding of it is a very matter of fact, and it's not all romanticized or confused or lost in the mists of time. And so, you know, it's part of my mission, if you like, to say to people, well, this is what I understand it to mean, and don't run away from it, embrace it, because it is your heritage. you know, then we can get back to actually what being a human really means. You know, I mean, you know, every time we use a mobile phone to connect with somebody, we are not telepathically connecting. You know, if we took away mobile phones now, and we ran schools or centres to teach people how to reconnect and be telepathic, you know, that would be wonderful. But of course, it wouldn't be what the elite want. So we are substituting real, genuine psychic powers for electronic stand-ins. And this is part of the Archon's plan to prevent humans from connecting with humanity and replacing everything with a computer. I mean, I use a sat navigational system in my car. I have dyslexia, and I probably couldn't find the third street down, so maybe that's an excuse. But the reality is that if you were to take a random sample of drivers now and 30 years ago, and then say to each driver, here's a map, go and find such and such a town, the people from 30 years ago would probably far outperform, because they were used to using their head, whereas now we're so dependent on a machine to tell us to turn left that if we took that away, we probably wouldn't have the skills now to read a map. So it's not a joke. This is very serious, because humanity is being forced by a very, very evil agenda to break its connection with the planet, break its connection with God or Source, whatever you want to call it, and to rely more and more and more on machinery. It's not to say that a machine doesn't make our lives easier, and I'm all for that. You know, I have a dishwasher. Absolutely, I have a washing machine. But I just want people to be aware that there is an agenda going on here, which even those people in the high-ups in these corporations don't actually understand. But apart from that, you know, we need to maintain that being human is very special. And I mean, you know, I'm speaking here, and I've got one-third reptilian in me and one-third mantid and only one-third human. But I understand that it's about the human race. This is all about the human race. And they're good. They could be absolutely brilliant. And that's what this is all about. It's about the chance for a race that was tricked and fooled to actually step into its own power, take back the reins of control, and finally be what it should always have been. And, you know, anybody good, regardless of whether they're reptilian or whatever they might be, if you believe in the good, you've got to support the human race. And you've got to speak out, or at least do something positive, whatever that might be. I mean, I've got, there's a 75-year-old woman who said, you know, she can't do much, but she said, I'll stick stamps on an envelope and post them out to people if that will help. You know, and as in The Lord of the Rings, when Balin and Butterbur says, I don't know what the likes of me can do against the shadow of the East, and Strider or Aragorn says, not much, but every little helps. And I think that's the point, that this is a time when all humans should actually club together and help each other out.
And it's the 12 strands that seem to be the connecting principle of consciousness. That and what I, you know, what I interpret what you're saying as is, that you get all the 12 strands. It's like you go round. It's like one of those games where you have to pick up a thing, an adventure game. You pick up a piece, and when you get all the pieces at the end of the game, that's when the 13th gene, the metagene, that brings them all together. One ring to bind them all. Is that, I mean, is this what it's about, Simon?
Well, I call the group that I'm in the process of forming Connecting Consciousness. And Connecting Consciousness is, for me, the 12 strands. It was very, very important when Source created the human line that some things remain secret and beyond the understanding of, you know, most living things. That's what makes Source different. And with the human line, it is special. you know, it's more special than the reptilians. It's more special than the mantids. That's why there's such an interest in humanity and the planet. You know, that's what it's all about. It's about the human condition. It's about the 12 strands and this tumbler lock, which I describe as, which keeps that information safe. And when the time is right, that tumbler lock will undo, draw in a great bundle the 12 strands, and because they're energy, they are separate, yet they connect. You know, you think of a fiber optic cable that the utility company runs, where you can have 20, 30 phone calls down that one fiber line, but each is at a different pulse rate of light, so they never bump into each other, therefore the communications are never mixed up. So I want you to imagine a strand of DNA that can do that, but can be separate, but can intertwine and connect and share its memory or consciousness with the next strand. So an absolutely wonderful piece of technology, absolutely beautiful, and it's about time that humans got it back again.
Technology. DNA as technology implies that somebody's invented it.
It is technology because somebody did create it. It was created. And it didn't just come about by chance or by Charles Darwin theory of evolution. It was actually part of a plan worked out by something that had such a brain on it that it could actually work all this out and put it all together and it would work perfectly. I have actually, on a couple of occasions, spoken about that when you fly an alien spacecraft, the speed at which you're capable of flying it depends on your type of DNA. And humans can fly alien spacecraft faster than some other races. And that's another reason why they want the human DNA, because literally it would just give them access to faster travel and also for time travel. There are time machines out there, but when you operate one with DNA, then you have a control over it that doesn't exist at the moment. So technology not as wires and buttons and flashing lights, but technology in terms of something that was created and was something that was designed and something that learns and changes and self-replicates. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay, we're getting deep here. But let me get back to the questions, because there's some people who are in need, so for instance, I am a psych nurse and come across demon-possessed people all the time. I and other colleagues can see it in their eyes and the whole sphere. I've gotten attacked many times. How can we help these patients?
Well, first of all, it's wonderful that somebody who's been through the registered medical profession can actually send us a question and says, there's a demon behind this person.
Because, yes, well done.
Because, you know, normally that's just not the case. You would say they had a mental condition because they were dropped on their head as a baby, or basically, you know, they had a fit when they were 15 or whatever nonsense. So well done for that person. What can you do to help them? I'm afraid there isn't much you can do. It's quite emotional for me because I want to help these people. What has to happen is that the individual concerned has to know that they're afflicted. Because if a person doesn't know they've got a problem, then I or nobody like me can help, because it's about free will. When a person comes to me generally, JP, they say, I know something's wrong. And during conversation, because I can never lead people, I can never say to them, oh, by the way, you've got this. Because that's me telling them. They have to tell me that something's inside them. That's generally what people say. I think something's inside me. I think something got inside me. Bang, at last, well done, we're there. Then I can take it on. So if somebody says, I think that I'm not right, there's something, you know, doing this, then what has to happen is that person would then have to either go to a church man or woman or somebody like me to have that creature removed. However, I can. I'm going to be putting something on the website, because I have been inundated with calls for help regarding demonic possession, and I don't like to keep people waiting, so I'm actually going to put a bit of page up to explain what people can do in the meantime before they get to speak to me. So I would just say, you know, check back with the website fairly soon and we'll put something up there.
It certainly sounds like there's going to be like certain sections, like different topics that you specialise in, and you know, like we said, you know, we've got the jinns there, and that now we've got the demonic depossessions, and can you? I mean, actually, you shouldn't speak about it, should you? Because your methods are specific and maybe what's the word, hacked. Prevented about, so we better not talk about it. Is that a better strategy?
I think what I can say is that there are basically two ways of getting rid of these creatures. One is the traditional way, which is you have a lot of mantras written on copper sheeting, metal sheeting, or parchment, and you spend many, many hours recanting. The problem is you've got to recant these things exactly accurately. That's the problem. And then this is generally for calling forth these creatures, but it can also be for calling them back. And that is a very time-consuming and difficult process. That's why these people charge money for it, like hundreds of pounds to do it. Whereas I don't use mantras or burning sage and things like that. You know, I use another method, which is if a person has an interesting soul, JP, if you have an interesting soul that's been around for a long time, many people have got souls that have been here for ages, you yourself probably, you know, been around a very long time. But if you have in the past had association in that field, then, and the soul that you have is senior enough as far as these creatures are concerned, then you have the right to give them orders and they have to follow it. So one doesn't need great long mantras and this, that, and the other. It's just a complete clash of wills. It's a mind battle. I often describe it as a game of celestial chess, because these creatures do not want to leave, in most cases, a human body. They've been in there 20, 30 years. It's their home. They don't want to be out of it. So it's a mind battle. It happens energy. You know, I don't have to ring any bells or, you know, light an incense stick. I just sit with the person and I just communicate with the creature, tell it its time is up, it needs to go. But you know, you can certainly do it other ways, but that's just the way I do it.
Okay, so it's a matter, I mean, I think I heard you talking about King Solomon and the jinn, and the connection of an iron ring that the jinn respected because it belonged to Solomon. But they kind of respected Solomon, but they didn't respect the other guys who were trying to use it. Let's see if I've remembered this correctly. Nearly. Do you want to fill the people in on the story? Because like, you can tell it better and I'll know it better next time.
All right. Well, that's very kind of you, JP. I mean, I'm amazed how much you do remember, because, you know, you have lots and lots of guests and, you know, you study lots of topics. And I think the fact that you remember anything that I say, I think is amazing. Yes, the understanding is that, I mean, iron is a magical metal. I mean, I try to explain it this way. North Italy, a very, very important place. Venice is a very important place, was an important place. And then we had some very interesting things, because we had man like Galileo come along, we had Leonardo da Vinci, and suddenly these people talked about pulleys and strings and wires and levers, and this was science. Whereas alchemy and many other things which had been seen as science were now relegated to the world of magic. And so the Renaissance sure saw a division between science and magic. Now, these creatures that afflict people belong to the old world, so there are certain things which are magic to them. Iron is a magic metal. It will always be magic. But it's very powerfully magic if it's in the hands of somebody who knows how to command it. You have to command a jinn. That is the exact terminology. Solomon commanded a jinn. Solomon, you go on eBay. Oh, I shouldn't advertise. If you go on the internet and you can buy or look at rings, mainly in America, that says Solomon's ring, and they are rings that purport to be, you know, replicas of King Solomon's ring. I haven't seen one ring on any internet site that actually looks like King Solomon's ring. And they know what it looked like. It has to be made of iron. The problem is that a ring that's, as we understand it, is a disc that's joined. Now that represents a vortex. So when you wear a iron ring on your finger, and you do what, I'm not going to tell you what you do, but you do what you do, is very threatening to these creatures. And if you have an iron ring that's, as we would understand a ring, then it's a vortex, which means that the creature can be trapped in the iron ring and spin round and round and round for eternity, which means the creatures hate you. The creatures hated Solomon because they weren't willingly doing what they were doing it under duress, and the hatred builds up and up and up. So I don't use an iron ring that's solid. My ring has a break in it, so that the creatures are not being threatened with eternal trapping. So therefore it's not an immediate, this is him or me. I always offer a way out, which is go back to the realm, you know, go back to where you come from. And as a sort of a joke, I talk about the Dracula films where, you know, the priest, who's got lots of problems in his own life, stands there very shakily with the cross or the crucifix and says to Dracula, you know, back you devil, and Dracula just laughs at him. And it's about the respect for the soul in the organic body. Because if the soul in the organic body is such, and is then combined with an iron ring, these creatures won't stand against it. But the alternative, if you don't have that history, is to get lots of mantras, and you know that does work. Absolutely it works, but it takes 20 times longer. So that's a sort of my answer as best I can without, you know, giving too much away.
Okay, so it's actually a kind of ranking, or not. Yeah, anyway, so I think we get it. So let's move towards now that's a oh dear, do we really want to cover flat earth? No. Hey, is there clear, let's just deal with it. All right. Is there truth in the claim that the earth is actually flat with the sun revolving around it? Sorry.
You just do it deliberately to me, don't you?
No. I just somebody spammed it in the chat room, and I've got a word about them. Please have your word about the flat earth.
Right. Okay. The reason that I'm sort of mildly frustrated is that this is doing the rounds again. A couple of people have talked very eloquently and given some very interesting points on it. And the reason, again, I'm frustrated is because I'm not disagreeing with it. I disagree with on a technical line, just a technical point. And this is the point. To me, the Earth is not flat, but the whole of the universe, the multiverse, is created on a, like a disk in a computer. Your hard disk on your computer is flat. It's like an old vinyl record. And we know that hard drive on your disk, when run through a monitor screen, can create 3D pictures of trees and houses and waterfalls and all the rest of it. And they look perfectly real. So if I was to walk from one end of the earth to the other, I will not fall off it. Because it is not flat. Okay. It will not fall off it. And I won't just nip round the edge either. It will be a gentle curving edge. but it is being created by a flat holographic projector. So my understanding is that everything around us is a holographic projected universe. It is projected by a device that is flat, but this flat device can produce 3D solid objects that are not flat. So my frustration, mildly, is not, oh, this is a stupid question. It's not. It's a very, very, very poignant, intelligent question. It's just that I don't believe that the Earth is flat, but I believe that what creates it, projects it, is from a flat holographic disk.
Okay. Thank you. If the answer to the first part of this question is yes, you drop yourself in it. What advantage would it be to convince people that the Earth is spherical and revolves around the sun?
Do you want to do a show on Christmas Day with me?
I think we should do an April 1st day. I'd love to.
Let's just move on.
Okay. So, meanwhile, let's go back. So this... this looks like there's a question from a lady from Austria, this is a personal question, so I think you should book how's the booking thing is going, Simon?
I won the argument with the remainder of the team, and we are going to start booking again in small numbers. And so hopefully we'll be, you know, back in business very soon.
Good. Thank you, Simon. Okay.
So there was a personal question. In is it very personal or?
Well, here let me read it. Let me just do it. When I was a child, I always think, why are the people so bad, and where is God, and where is Jesus? Then I was a young woman, I understand more and more, but I always think I'm not from the earth. And in meditation, I became an answer that I am Samiria from Triton. Is that true or a mind control? Now I'm 43 years old, and I know anything from what you're always speaking. Sorry for my English, I hope you'll understand me. And my question is, why I always stop to come forward? I am not my body, not my country, and alone with my mind in my home.
Right. Does sound to me very much like somebody who has non-Earth human soul in them, sort of surprisingly common. If it was mind control, what would be the purpose? If you worked for the military, or you were a very senior diplomat, or a politician, or something like that, then you would say, yeah, there's a potential that it would be mind control because it was some element for an agenda. But if you are, you know, like most of us, an ordinary person, then why would anybody elite want to do that? So no, it's probably this person has got a non-Earth human soul, their organic brain has connected with their soul, the memories are coming back, and they are beginning to understand they're very different. So yeah, you're absolutely right, JP. He or she, I think it was a female, would like to book. Then yeah, I'll have a chat with them.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay. Right now, from the outside to the inside, can you please? This is from Jeanette. Can you please ask Simon to describe the experience of being inside a mantis body? Did he feel, think, perceive very differently? Do the mantis have additional or heightened senses? Yeah, I mean, these are the really interesting questions for me. What is it like being inside a mantis body?
Right. Wow. Did you say it was Janet or Janice?
Jeanette.
Okay, hello, Jeanette. I hope you're listening. First time in 5 years anybody's ever asked me that question.
Really?
Yeah, nobody, they're all too frightened to ask questions like that, I think.
Well, we have extra components here on Wolfsburg.
My goodness me, I mean, this is it. It's the cream of the cream here. Right. I'm going to start off by having a joke and saying a very unbending body. right. When in such a body, you don't actually feel that you're in the wrong body. I remember the very, very first time as a child, so it would be... I've been somewhere between 5 and 7 years old. I remember putting my hands up to my face and feeling my face and feeling this is ridiculous. This, you know, this is not my face. This just goes on and on. This, like, front part of me, and thinking, is it real? Is it like a mask? I actually thought it was a mask, and then realized it wasn't, because it had sense. You could touch it and could feel and sense through it. And then subsequent times I became very used to it. I've been in those bodies in the fourth dimension. I've not been in that body in the third dimension, which means that I've had full access to the abilities of that physical body. And by utilizing the one-third mantis soul, would then connect with 100% mantis body, and that then forms a connection. So first of all, telepathy, but more than that, scanning. I remember walking along, and there's a long table, some form of celebration, and all the mantis were sitting there. They don't eat, they drink, so they have special things with like metal straws to get their sustenance through. And as I walked past, because the mantis have eyes that take up nearly one third of their head, and this like big wrap around, actually not just scanning these creatures but also looking into them, to their exoskeleton almost, so understanding their intentions. It's like a penetrative radar, so they have the ability to know what a person's thinking, a bit like reptilians actually, before that person almost knows themselves what they're thinking. So from a psychic, just completely off the scale, absolutely incredibly psychic. Physically very difficult and moving. You actually have to lift your knees up when you walk. So think how we walk as a human. Well, you actually have to lift your knees up quite high because of the way that the body structure is. I wore clothes. I had a purple robe, and I can just remember the feet protruding from the rope as I moved, and then the sleeves can very long, and they can just cover your hands completely, so you have to lift your hands up so that the sleeves drop down. And then you just get used to it. It's just, you know, you're back in what's your other body, if you like. It's perfectly normal. And when you are interacting with humans, they some of them identified that there was something different. A couple of times people have said to me when I've been in that body, you're different. And I've replied, yes, you know, I'm part human. And in one particular case, this female was really shocked and said, you're human? And obviously I'm not, because I'm standing there in a different body. I said, no, I'm part human. So if you are in a mantis body and you engage with humans on a regular basis, and they're used to that particular race, they would know that there was something different, because the soul in that body wasn't 100% mantis, that there were other aspects to it. It's a bit like if you had a brother and a sister, and one was blind, and then you substituted one of the other brother or sister and said, oh, that's your sister. Although that person would be blind, they would know that that wasn't their true brother or sister, because they would just know. And so when you have you interact with people when you're in one of these bodies, many of them actually can tell that you're slightly different. So fascinating question. I haven't got any more time to talk about it, because we mustn't be unfair to other people, but it's a pleasure to be asked that question, actually, JP.
Really? Okay, well, perhaps in the future we'll explore a little more about the mantis civilization and culture. Presumably they do have it, and it's, you know, like when you were talking about like walking past the group of people who were drinking, it wasn't like, oi, Simon, come over here, mate. I don't quite imagine that. You know, it was a little different kind of atmosphere.
I shan't be inviting you there.
Yeah, because of course they would hear what I was thinking. I have all these very irreverent thoughts. I'd be terrible in front of all these people.
it's funny. I was chatting to one person once, and I was in my body, this body here, and this person said to me, "You know what? I always wonder, because when I'm."
Uh-oh, there we go.
In the kitchen, she said to me, and I'm chopping up vegetables, and I've got a really sharp knife, and they turn up. You know, I always wonder, do they think I'm going to attack them because I've got a... Hello, anybody there?
Yeah, we got a little bit dropped there.
That was, no, we did.
Yeah, not
Are we
bad.
Still on air?
Yeah, we're still on air, yep.
Okay, quickly then.
So, do you want to go back about the knife?
Chatted to a person who said they were often wondered when they were in the kitchen chopping vegetables with a great big sharp knife, when an alien turned up, wasn't there a chance that they were frightened, they thought they were going to be attacked with a person, you know, with a knife? And I said, no, because they read your thoughts and they know immediately. It's such as, you know, you have a cordless screwdriver. Well, some of these cordless screwdrivers look like weapons. But the thing is, it's not what you're holding, it's what your thought intention is. So they read your thought intentions. So you could be holding a gun, but if your thought intention is not to fire that gun, they won't have any concern at all. So yes, they would read your mind straight away.
And they would be able to feel the build-up of emotion in you as well.
I think they would be marvellously impressed with your range of humour and jokes, JP.
I hope that I would be, you know, sufficiently in a state of non-shock to be able to go, "Hey guys, how's it going?" You know, because
of course you would.
You know, I might be like, ruining my laundry. Anyway, so let's take that away. Let's give a shout out to the Lirans. Question: if someone has a Liran soul, were they always that origin, or could a soul be Liran for a time, then become reptilian for a time, etc.?
No. Yeah. Source, God, whatever you want, creates a soul. When it does so, that soul is absolutely pure, and it is given all the information it needs to decide where it wants to go. Sometimes they don't go anywhere. They stay there because they're not decided. But in most cases, the souls decide where is their family. So the very first body, whether it's a physical body or an energy body, or whether it's just floating around in a cloud of dust, you know, for the time, that is where it considers its beginnings. And if you incarnate in a Lyran body, then you are saying, this is my family, and that race will accept you. Now, you stay there one day, let's just say one day, and you say, oh, and I think I'll go and experience what it's like in the fourth dimension. So you leave the sixth, and you go to the fourth, and you spend 10 million years in the fourth. Well, that doesn't take away from the fact that your first choice was the sixth dimension with Lyra. So but because you've spent so much time in another place, your soul begins to take on the body. So let's just say, for instance, that person incarnates today, 25 years ago. We've got a 25-year-old person in front of us who spent one day in a Lyran body and 10 million years in a feline body, in a lion body from Sirius or Orion, one of the planets there. When we look at that person, then when I look at that person, I would immediately say, oh, you're Lyran, because that was the place you chose as your family. But I would then look at the energy signature of that person and say, but you have this lion or feline or Khetkari element to you, so you must have been in these planets. So, yes, you will always take after the first physical or non-physical body that you incarnate into, because that is your star family. But you can be accepted by another family, and you begin to change or alter slightly to that, but your soul will stay the same, unless you agree, or not as the case may be, to have other elements added onto your soul. quite complicated, but I hope that helps.
At the end of the show, that's a really great cliffhanger. You know, because that opens up so many questions, and most of the questions in this list have still not been answered. So we got plenty of material, Simon. and they come in over the month. So, thank you so much for answering the questions so gracefully, so honestly, so what's the word? Candidly. This has been Connecting Consciousness on Wolf Spirit Radio.